Animate Hands. I'm Lyle.
I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Alan.
And I need smaller friends.
Oh my, I was slouching for you.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
Nice. We'll get you a phone book. You'll be fine.
I need like maybe the phone books off of my shoulders too.
You want a booster seat?
Yeah, booster seat. Yeah, yeah. Sure. Yeah. And, well, this is Animate Hands first, and that we're going to be filming and recording a podcast at the same time.
We
will. So hopefully this will be a successful first.
Yes.
If not, you'll never see this.
Right. So, what are we here to talk about today?
We are here to talk about Conan. The Conan RPG.
Oh, yeah.
And the 2011 Conan movie. So just like our Mutant Chronicles episode, it's a double feature. And it's a book review of the Conan RPG in that we didn't actually play it. We just read through the PDF. And it's, I guess, a real review
we
of the movie,
and
that we did. We experienced it.
I wish I just like read a review and I could review
it. Yeah,
that.
I wish I just read the back here and then tell us. Yeah,
look at the content.
I'm giving some spoilers though on our review. We don't want to tip our hands. So we'll start with a review of the Conan RPG, and then after that, we'll talk about the movie.
Yeah, so this is the Modiphius RPG, and so this is the same 2D20 system that they used for Mutant Chronicles. Mm-hmm. So if you watched or listened to our Mutant Chronicles review, you know the system, and so just some of the names are going to be different for some of these mechanics and the way the points are named, and just things that fit the setting a little bit more, things that have a more Conan theme.
Right. But what is the 2D20 system? What would be an overview that we could provide people who didn't watch Mutant Chronicles?
Yeah, so the 2D20 means that for every skill check or any time you're challenged, you're rolling two 20-sided die. And so you're trying to roll under a target number, one being a critical success, and there's a difficulty rating on skill checks or actions that you're performing, and so you'll need multiple successes. And if you need more than two, if it's a very high difficulty, it'll have a skill rating of three or four. So that means you need more successes than two 20-sided die will provide. So that's where some of their additional points, like momentum and fortune, come into play, because that gives you additional die to roll, so that you actually are able to complete very difficult tasks by rolling a handful of multiple successes on 20-sided die.
So it's a lot like a D20 system.
Yes.
In a sense, but just kind of reverse that you're rolling under.
It reminded me of the 100 percentile Cthulhu.
Mm-hmm.
You're always trying to roll under your stats.
Yeah, sure, like a percentage, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, they do damage a little bit differently than what people might be used to. I mean, if you're playing coming from a Dungeons & Dragons, you would roll like a D6, and whatever number comes up, that's the number of damage. Here you roll the number of dice that it says. So if it's, let's say, damage 4, it's meaning you're rolling 4 d6s. They have special dice for their games, but you can also use regular dice in that 1 and 2 indicates the amount of damage, 3, 4, 5 is nothing, and then 6 is like a special effect.
Right.
So, I mean, that also is different, both the 2d20 and this damage die that they have. In addition, they have, as Jeremy alluded to, things like a doom pool, which the game master uses in order to do things such as take initiative in an action. And then they have the fortune pool,
right,
which people start with 3, and then they can spend these points or these tokens in order to get an extra success or an auto success,
right,
or to heal some damage.
Or additional action. Or take additional
action.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and so and it's interesting, the doom pool mechanic for the GM is interesting because there are certain things that trigger it, but also to move the players along, say there's too much of a discussion about what they're doing next, or you want to kind of press upon them that time is of the essence, you can start adding points to that doom pool for every, just every time you feel that the players are delaying, just to kind of motivate them, because they know that the situation can get much worse the more doom the GM has to spend.
Right.
That was a pretty interesting aspect of this game, and I thought it was a really interesting storytelling mechanic of sorts, because, you see this doom just kind of piling up in front of the GM screen, like it's kind of visible to the player, so you know that something is going to happen eventually, and it kind of motivates, progression. And also, I think it's probably a better way of dealing with like a random encounter of sorts, because I know in D&D you just do random encounters, but this is like kind of like, you've accumulated a lot of it, I'm going to spend it, and like, this is going to happen. I think that's kind of an interesting aspect of the game.
And with their skills, they have both an expertise or a focus. So expertise increases your chance of succeeding, and focus increases your chance of an extra success. It's, again, a little bit differently, maybe, perhaps, than a game that has just a simple a skill check, you know, allows me to succeed or not succeed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the difficulty rating, it, you know, that's what makes the 2D20 system interesting, is not, are you getting advantage rolling two dice and taking the higher roll? You need multiple successful, you know, lower rolls in this case, but you need multiple successful rolls, the harder or more against the odds what you're facing.
It reminds me of, like, both the D20 system married with the World of Darkness system, which relies on you hitting numbers and getting a number of successes.
Mm-hmm.
And here it's like, well, it's kind of the same thing, getting a number of successes, less so than the World of Darkness. But so that's the system in a nutshell. Now, what about the book itself?
Yeah, we've seen the digital version,
mm-hmm.
but you know, that's basically what went to the printers. So yeah, the book itself is well laid out. It's well illustrated. It's not, you know, classical illustrations, you know, and it's not the classical things you've seen from the, you know, mass market. There's no Frazetta or there's
yeah,
no,
okay.
But the, at least the beginning of it, like character creation and the beginning of it, they're giving you examples and they're giving you images
mm-hmm.
to look at.
Yeah, it actually starts with them explaining why they want to do a Conan game or kind of their experience, the designer's
mm-hmm.
experience with Conan. Then it gets into a biography of Robert E. Howard, the
mm-hmm.
creator of Conan. And then he gets into the character creation, the system,
mm-hmm.
and then at the end, like, the setting, as well as a sample of monsters or opponents that the characters can face.
You know, I'd actually never read any of the Conan books.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before I did this, I read the comic book.
Yeah.
And I've seen the movies, of course. So, you know, having a little bit about Robert E. Howard and having a few excerpts from the actual book was really interesting flavor. It really helped
mm-hmm.
me
mm-hmm.
a little bit, like getting to know the setting.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's definitely a lot more to Conan than just what's in the movies and whatnot. So,
right.
Yeah, I think it's good for me. But maybe someone who's actually really well-versed in, like, the world of Conan and has read a lot of the books
yeah.
might not be as interesting to them. I don't know.
Yeah, because if you buy the collection of stories for Robert E. Howard, they actually have that same biography at the beginning of each
mm-hmm.
one,
mm-hmm.
which is the same that you would find on Wikipedia. So to have several pages devoted to something that I've read like 3 or 4 times. Yeah, I can certainly see a player who hasn't read any Conan finding that interesting, but then somebody like me was like, that, those are just pages to skip through.
You kind of have to put that in the beginning if you're making
do
a
you?
Collection. I don't know, they're getting the license from like
well, for,
the family
I mean,
and whatnot.
For,
it's like,
sure, but if you get like the Marvel license or the DC license, you don't necessarily talk about Bob Kane or Stan Lee and
yeah.
provide their biography. And yeah, I can see an argument for both.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it really depends on the player. And you can easily argue, hey, better safe than sorry, include it. But considering that it followed also, hey, why this guy's personal experience with Conan, which I did not find interesting at all, you're like, okay, enough. All right.
Well,
we get it. You love Conan.
Right. I think part of that, and I think that has, in a lot of, especially Lovecraft or Robert E. Howard, there's a lot of products out there. There's a lot of gaming and things you can do in those worlds. And so people want to kind of prove their legitimacy. Like, we are the fans that are going back to the
yeah.
real
okay.
source.
Yeah.
And so I think that's what that part of that is like,
yeah.
Yeah, our Conan product is going to be faithful to the original.
Mm-hmm.
And especially with a property like Conan that is kind of in pastiched and best.
Sure.
Yeah, it's been watered down and different things have been done with it. To try to say we're the legitimate, we're going back to the source. It's their attempt to kind of a, you know, a marketing attempt to put themselves over on their competition.
Mm-hmm.
It's, yeah, it's just, I think it's one of those things.
Yeah. Then it gets into the character creation system,
mm-hmm.
which is what I would say, if somebody was familiar with the BattleTech RPG, or which was called MechWarrior previously, or familiar with Traveler when we talk about Life Path. So it is certainly different than creating a character in something like World of Darkness or creating a character like in Dungeons and Dragons, and that you are following a series of steps where you're creating different stages of your life and then putting it together, which might be different than the more plugging things together, like race, class, boom, background,
yeah.
boom. There we go. There's the package.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, you're doing your vampire. This is kind of vampire I am. This is my, you know, the group I'm with, boom, put those together. There's my package here. You're like, let's start from birth.
It talks about your region and stuff like
yeah.
that, where you're from.
Yeah.
I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I really did like that.
Mm-hmm.
Especially like, you know, you could choose. You could obviously pick and choose what you want of each. But, you know, I thought it would be really a lot of fun to just go in there and just roll randomly in all those charts and just see where you end up, what kind of character you get.
And just really, like Wheel of Chronicles is the same. It's designed that you can do it either way. You could do it your way, where you do it random and just like, hey, what do I end up with in the end? Or if somebody's got a clear idea what they want to be, they can then go through and sort of pick at each stage what they want or spend points on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also just going through that, it really got me a lot more familiar with the setting, just because, you know, you could end up being someone from a certain region, and then it kind of tells you a little bit about that region and how those people live. And then and then you're looking at other regions and other types of people and other tribes, and you're learning a lot more about the world just by going through this character creation process.
Yeah, and just like the Mutant Chronicles, it is very involved. It's a long process, and you go through 10 major steps, and at the end you still may want to do some fine tuning to get exactly the, you know, proficiency with range weapons or, you know, whatever you were really focusing on. And I think that's partly due to having the skill expertise and skill focus, and certain parts of your history are going to give you those benefits. And so if you want to weigh things heavily towards something, you're going to have to kind of do some of that fine tuning.
Yeah. I mean, well, there's several steps, and going through these steps kind of gives you an idea how to create a character, but also gives you an idea of the different information that you would find on a character sheet. So you start off with your homeland and your talent. Now, similar to the Star Wars RPG, and I think it's because it shares a creator, is that you have talents which give you sort of like a skill tree. So if you have this talent, then you can have access to these skills. So that's what the talents are. So you pick your homeland, which gives you like a talent and a language. Then you get your attributes, which, it's different in that you choose like your mandatory attributes, and which is your best one, which is your worst one. I actually found that confusing, because your worst one is actually better than other ones.
Yes.
So you choose your mandatory ones. One's your best, and of course, it's clearly your best one. Then you choose your worst, and it's better than some other attributes. It's not actually your worst one. It just happens to be the worst one of this thing.
Like your least best.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, your least best is the one. And yeah, I had to read that several times.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also choose other bonuses that you can provide. Then you get into like your attribute aspects. You get into your cast, which gives you more talents and a skill. And an example of a cast would be like farmer or warrior.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get into your story, which is, I think, a good thing, is that it really encourages you to think of a background. Like Alan alluded to before, there's things in this game that really focus on role-playing and narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of them. And this gives you, you know, a trait, an event. Then your archetype, which gives you more skills and the talent. These are things like barbarian, scholar, archer. Then you get into your nature, which can improve attributes and gives you another skill or adds to your skills and your talents. Then you get your education, which helps with your skills again. Then you get into your war story, which adds to the focus and expertise, which we talked to, so it's connected to skills. Then you get into your finishing touches, which adds to your skills. And then you get your final calculations, which is things like your resolve and goals and that. It
gets a little convoluted, doesn't it?
Well, it gets a little samey as you go through and make your thing, because it's not like, this step gives me my skills, this step gives me my talents, or I suppose it should be the other way around. Or this step gives me my attributes, and this step gives me traits that will, you know, trigger this. They just keep adding to skills and that. They keep adding to the same type of thing. And it can make sense, because if you're an archer, you're going to learn different things, because you got off the farm and you learned this. And then that's your cast, and then you know, part of your archetype is you're an archer, and that gave me new skills that I learned. And I can certainly understand as you progress through your life. And the Mutant Chronicles has something similar. I mean, you go through like this school, military school, and then you get into an advanced military school. And it didn't bother me as much in the Mutant Chronicles.
It will add a lot to a variety, though. Like, you know, you'll have with all your skills, you'll have a lot.
Yeah.
A very different character, like, especially when we're playing D&D, like, if you choose like a certain race and class, you're going to have the same characters no matter your background.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is like, you might have a similar type of character, but you're bound to have different abilities because of, you know, different branches that you've taken.
Absolutely. I can definitely see the argument where it allows you to customize your character. Definitely 100% see that argument. But I also know that I think it's a different time. I think this is definitely a throwback in character creation, in that they seem to think that players want to invest a lot of time in creating the character. And I think maybe players like to, in their mind, think about their character backstory and what the character is. But I think when it comes down to writing stuff on a page and writing down numbers, I think people want to go much more quickly than this is doing. I think there's a certain fatigue that would set in if you did this. I mean, War Story, which is step 8 or 9, is interesting because it's like shipwrecked or you defeated this big beast or something. And you're like, oh, that's kind of cool. And, you know, I rolled that randomly. Now, how do I work in shipwrecked into my backstory? That would be pretty interesting. But at step 8... Yeah, they might be a little bit tired. And what it actually gives you is just adding focus and expertise, which is just, again, adding to skills.
Right.
Yeah. I like the idea, but perhaps not the execution. That's what it is. I mean, and that is something that's part of this system. So I think people are familiar with Conan, and they can go into Mutant Chronicles, and then they're going to go, yeah, I'm really down with these life paths.
You know? Yeah. Yeah, I think definitely both of these IPs are... they're aiming at people that are really interested in this setting and maybe had some experience with, you know, the books or the game, you know, other games or something that they want to really flesh things out. But I think you do have a good point. Like, just looking through the D&D 5e character creation, the player's handbook, there is character creation isn't as complicated. And then they also have a, if you want to make a quick version, just do this, this, and this.
Yeah.
You know, they move ahead quickly. They get people creating characters, you know, right out of the gate. And also, with this system, and I think that's true of most of the Modiphius systems, there isn't a starter set, there isn't pre-gen characters. Mm-hmm. So the character creation is, you know, part of the incentive, you know, to want to play that first session of creating characters. It might be one of the big joys of using the system.
Yeah, but then again, something like D&D 5e is definitely like catering to like a different crowd. Like that, you're going to see that in a Barnes & Noble. You're going to walk in there and you're going to be like, oh yeah, I heard about this game. I'm going to go buy this. And then, you know, those people may never have played an RPG before. That's like their gateway. Someone who comes across this like Conan game, probably this isn't they're going to be their first RPG.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's necessary that they need to have like that quick fix.
Right,
you know,
I don't know, because I don't think necessarily the longer you play RPGs, the more you want to spend on character creation.
Well, it depends on what kind of RPG you want to play, right?
Well, I mean, if we even look at like Dungeons & Dragons, I would say it's a more complicated character creation than Dungeons & Dragons. And we have a recent experience of somebody coming from Powered by the Apocalypse, which is a much quicker character creation system than even Dungeons & Dragons, reacting quite negatively to the amount of time and pages that he needed to read in order to create his character. And then I'm thinking playing games like Rifts, or looking at
like
the
GURPS,
Conan ones,
right?
or even GURPS, and you're like, well, if you think Dungeons & Dragons is that taxing, you should see some other games that are out there. Yeah, and I don't think a love of Conan necessarily means that, again, you want to spend a long time making a Conan character. So I don't necessarily see either one of those helping you. I think it's somebody who likes spending a long time making characters is going to love this. Somebody who likes Life Paths is going to love this.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody who wants to just... quickly, I want to be Barbarian. How do I be Conan? You know, like,
yeah.
That's the GM.
Funny you should ask. You know?
But I don't know. I see people who are coming from like Shadowrun, people who are coming from like Monster Chronicles,
or people
who are coming from these other games.
Yeah.
And I see this as being a pretty on par, you know, in a sense. Especially, it's a lot easier to create a character in this than it is like in Shadowrun, which is a very popular RPG.
Just kind of my reaction is there's both good and bad to it. And one of them is the character creation did seem a bit tedious.
Maybe if they had a few pre-gens or something that someone who doesn't want to create a character, they could just, I want to be this character. They just can pick it if that scenario comes up. But, you know, I don't think you can cater to both. I think like you got to either have like your heavy rule set or you don't. Like, I know like, D&D made it pretty streamlined, especially with like 4E Essentials. Like that was incredibly streamlined. I love that. Like, you know, if you want to introduce someone to D&D, like go to like 4E Essentials and be like, here we go, just pick a character you want to play. Okay, there you go. Like there isn't really any work to it besides that. But someone who wants a little bit more crunch, they're going to want to get in there and they're going to want to spend time with their character.
Yeah.
It really depends on what kind of RPG you want to play. And, or in their case, what kind of RPG they wanted to make. So... I thought it was well made. It was definitely step by step, and if you just went in there, you could just roll a few random numbers, and it would just make itself pretty much. You just write it down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no real decisions, honestly.
Yeah, you can randomly generate all of those steps, but if you wanted to, oh, I want to play a warrior, I want to play, you know, a heavy, you know, strong damage dealer, then yeah, you're not going to be guaranteed to get that. You're going to maybe get a wrathful battle farmer.
But yeah, I think it was definitely, I think as complex as it was, I think they laid it out pretty nicely.
Well, I think the attributes were confusing in how they presented it. They do provide an example character, so they walk you through that. Yeah, I guess if I felt that the steps were significantly different, then I might see more value in them. But I kind of thought we were treading the same. Okay, we got archetype, and you got your nature now, and your education, and just like kind of seem to be doing the same thing.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah. So certainly character creation, I mean, you see different opinions on it, but go in knowing that it's a bit more involved than maybe Powered by Apocalypse games, or more involved than Dungeons and Dragons. Put it as less involved than a GURPS.
Yeah.
And
I think less involved than Shadowrun.
Yeah, yeah. Or less bookkeeping than Palladium. But now with the apps, people are so dependent on apps and they just want to plug things in.
Mm-hmm.
And then we saw that in D&D where people
I've heard that.
Just like threw away the book and just like, oh, I just want to put my number. Look, five minutes and I'm done, and it did all the math for me.
Right.
So
yeah.
I think we've become a society that hates math. So that is character creation. And then it gets into the setting it gets into the system, which we covered, but then it moves on to the setting. And what they'll do is then there'll be like a picture and then quite a bit of text explaining this world. But it's all fluff, not any crunch. They don't provide any stats for these things. They just kind of explain the different areas of the world.
It's pretty interesting, but like, you know, that second half of the book wasn't really for me. Because I see myself primarily as a player in this. I would never GM it. I don't know anything about Conan.
Yeah.
I could play, I know a bit, but I could play in this world. I could make my character, I could make my background, I could know about that.
Mm-hmm.
But then anything else after that, I don't really need to know. I think that's up to the GM to know. Mm-hmm. And then they're going to be telling that story. I mean, I guess I might need to know a little bit about like where we are, I guess, because I could have like my character's knowledge of the location.
Yeah, I think it's valuable in that sense of like you are from this part of the world. Okay, what is that part of the world?
Yeah.
Like maybe read that section of the book. Yeah.
Yeah. But other than that, I think like I would really be dependent on the GM's knowledge of the RPG and of the GM's knowledge of the setting.
Yeah. And Mutant Chronicles really cautioned you on parts of the book that you as a player should read because there were certain spoilers that were definitely for Game Master's eyes only. So here, less so because it was just kind of walking you through a background, not walking you through a narrative, which is like the Mutant Chronicles.
Yeah. And I think there were certain things, especially with that Mutant Chronicles setting, the surprises and situations that they didn't want to spoil for the players. And with Conan, I think it's been fleshed out in the stories, and if you have any familiarity with the Conan stories, there's not going to be huge surprises in, you know, where the magic users are, where the barbarians are, where you're going to be is going to affect what you're going to encounter.
If I had a criticism of this part of the book, it would be that it was so text-heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And the art was good for the most part. There was something where it looked like, gosh, I would say like 14th century armor.
A little out of place.
Yeah, it was the Gothic style armor, very much the full plate, and it really seemed out of place for a Conan thing, even though it was one of the more advanced nations. But for the most part, I thought the art was really good, but it seemed so sparse, especially in the setting.
More,
it was like, I mean, what did these people look like? One picture of the marketplace in one of these places would have done so much more than all of that text.
Yeah.
So you're often reading it going, okay, well, what are the people there look like, and you know, how do they dress? And art is pretty expensive and adds a lot to the cost of these books, but I think that would have been money well spent.
Yeah, and we'll have to see, because they always do support their core books with their source books, so maybe they were kind of pulling some things back to, you know, for those books to be lushly illustrated. We won't know until it's released.
Yeah, we do have the adventure book.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I wouldn't describe that as lushly illustrated.
Yeah.
Again, well laid out, and the illustrations are good, but it does leave you wanting more.
Mm. You said the campaign was pretty successful for the most part, right?
Yeah, they just haven't finished publishing the books yet, but yeah, I think there's people definitely waiting for it. Yeah, it was a good success. Yeah, I'm not sure, I can't compare it to the Mutant Chronicles, because we kind of were after the fact, we kind of bought into Mutant Chronicles after the fact. But it was successful, and I think they unlocked everything during the campaigns. And it was just, you know, there's two whole waves of source books and materials, and then they went, you know, leather, you know, limited edition core, and then also, you know, specialized the Doom tokens and things that were, yeah.
The dice as well, right?
Yeah, right, and custom dice.
There's been certainly a Conan boom recently, hasn't there?
Well, yeah, there's the miniatures game.
Yes.
Or the mini board game.
The board game that contains miniatures.
Yes.
Right.
And this movie, oh my God.
Well, that's 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the adventure, I mean, the adventure was really good in that it's very faithful, or it was actually a series of adventures in this book. They're very faithful to the book, or the stories. So you actually feel like you're really playing a Conan story,
mm-hmm.
which is fantastic. What I found when I was like reading through these adventures, though, is it was difficult to judge the scale. Whereas in a game like Dungeons and Dragons, like levels 1 to 3, so you know what kind of characters are supposed to go in.
Mm-hmm.
And here I was like, what? I guess these are for beginning level characters, but it doesn't give you any information. So you just hope for the best, I guess. They didn't feel like adventures for a big group of people,
mm-hmm.
like a party. But that could just be that you're so into that Conan mindset, and then when it's being so faithful that you're like, I remember Conan like walking through something like this. Can't imagine an archer walking next to him.
So that brings up something, like, you're not actually Conan. Does Conan exist in this world?
Yeah, of course.
I guess. Or is he off doing something else while you're doing his adventure, or what?
They franchised out the adventure.
Yeah.
Doing that, yeah.
Conan's busy today. Can you take over this adventure for him?
I'm Conan too. I will be your adventurer.
I think it was very faithful, and for better or for worse.
Would you play it?
No.
Wow.
Like, not even as like, you know, Jeremy, you're
going to
GM. He's going to GM. You don't want to get out of his game.
Are you in on this?
I would play it to, just because to play with you guys, but would I buy the game? No. And I'm a big fan of the Mutant Chronicles, and I'm also a fan of the company. I have Mutant Year Zero, and I kickstarted Mechatron. And I think one of the things for me was, I think when I play fantasy, maybe like a lot of people, I can see people wanting to play Dungeons & Dragons more. Maybe I want to play like a game like D&D more than playing Conan, because you have more options. This here, like, you know, the sword and sorcery, the the low fantasy, I kind of feel like people are just going to play slight variations of themselves, of each other. Well, what about you? Would you buy the book?
I wouldn't, but I'd give it a go. I'd play it, especially if like someone's like running it. As I said, like, I don't know anything about Conan, really.
Yeah.
I know the movies. I'm interested in reading the books. Like, yeah, I don't really see myself buying this, just because I'd probably buy another book before that, you know? I'd probably buy the 5e player's manual or something.
Well, yeah, I think that's where I'm coming from, too, is it wouldn't be my first or even my third fantasy book.
I think it'd be interesting to play. It seems like a really interesting mechanic. I like the story element of building the character. I like to see how that Doom pool can be implemented.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of, you know, the setting's interesting in the fact that it's low magic, you know? Mm-hmm. And I really haven't played a game like that before. And it'd be nice to be able to play a game like that in a setting that I'm familiar with and that I don't dislike.
Yeah, I think this appeals to me in the same way like the Warhammer Fantasy role-playing does, kind of a guaranteed grim blood and guts miserable time. You know, it's going to be a little darker. And, you know, with the, you know, low fantasy, not relying on magic, there is going to be a lot more, you know, ugly combat, and things can be more savage. The whole tone of the game is going to be focused that way. So I think going into it, you're going to know that that's where you are. It's going to be a Conan world. You're going to have, you know, monster claws raked across your back. You're going to, you know, biting your way out of a lot of situations.
Yeah, I guess.
Like we did our D&D campaign.
For me, so would you buy it again? Like you did buy it.
Right, right.
Would you buy it again?
After looking at the mechanics, a little bit of it, I don't want to, you know, I do like Modiphius, and I like, they're working a lot to translate a lot of European RPGs, and I really appreciate what they're doing, but this is a bit of a reskin. So the things that I liked about Mutant Chronicles, this does feel like, okay, we're putting Conan over this. There is not a lot of original mechanics that really make me feel like, oh, they got the essence of that.
Yeah.
A lot of things are renamed, and there could have been, you know, savagery points or something that, you know, instead of saying there's a complication or there's going to be something working in your favor, there's going to be, you know, extra gore or extra savagery that is happening that would have fit the setting and kind of suited the flavor a little bit.
No, that's a good point. I think, I mean, there's two things against me buying it. One of them is what I liked about the system I can get from Mutant Chronicles. And if I wanted to play a fantasy game, it's already other fantasy games out there that I can play that I can either play as a low fantasy or high fantasy because they give me those options, which this doesn't. So I think those are two knocks against it. But it's certainly made by somebody who loves Conan. And next is the movie. I mean, this came about because we were really excited about the Mutant Chronicles, the game, so we thought, hey, let's watch the movie. And was the Mutant Chronicles movie good? No, not so much, but it wasn't a waste of 2 hours?
No, yeah, and there was enough in it.
Yeah.
You know, we could see what they were trying to do.
Yeah, so we...
And sometimes bad movies are fun. Right?
Yeah, and sometimes they're not. Wow, so we watched this.
Like, it had potential to be, like, a bad good, but it did not take that extra step. If it was just a little bit more ridiculous, I think I could have enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. But it was just not ridiculous enough, and it just took itself a little too seriously. Like, this has been in production hell for, like, over a decade, man. Like, seriously, this was... I was reading up about this movie's production and how it was originally going to have Schwarzenegger in it.
Right.
And I think, like, Rodriguez, his company, eventually got the rights, and then this... I forget what company, like, Miramax was going to produce it, or whoever produced the original one, and then it... switched companies, and Rose McGowan was going to be Red Sonja as well.
Okay.
Like, he was going to produce like Conan and Red Sonja, which is probably why she's in it, because she was attached to it to begin with.
Right.
And then they got changed different writers, and they went to someone else. And
Yeah. You know, Hot Mess makes it sound better than it actually was. Like you said, like, everybody took it very seriously. It just sucked all the joy, and actually a little behind the scenes, we were going to do a commentary track on it, and the joy just got sucked out of the room, that we just didn't want to talk anymore, and we just kind of stared listlessly at the microphone as the movie just played on and on, and I don't know, I could say it's nothing to say.
Yeah.
Maybe the worst movie I've ever seen.
Yeah. Well, I almost laughed twice. The second time was just a chuckle. I genuinely laughed when, what's that guy's name, the Reese... I forget, one of the guys with the fake teeth that was really annoying to listen to. He had this like little prosthetic in his mouth that was incredibly obvious that he had this prosthetic. Mm-hmm. And they put him in this catapult. And they just launch him across the battlefield. And he's just like... Wah! And he lands inside the hut of the bad guy, the John Voight guy. Mm-hmm. Is that his name?
John Voight?
No, it's Stephen Lang.
Stephen Lang. It just lands and then him and Rose McGowan are like... Well, Reese arrived, and I'm like, oh, that was funny.
Right, well, so we'll go through the movie. Anyway. So there will be spoilers, I mean, but not as much as the movie would spoil your day.
Right.
Yeah, so it starts off just like the Schwarzenegger Conan movie with a young Conan.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it starts with Conan in the womb.
Yeah, in utero.
Actually, literally born on the battlefield.
Yes.
Yeah, and which was pretty laughable. But it follows the, kind of like the trope where because somebody's going to have a dramatic moment on the battlefield, then... Everybody stops. Everybody gives them a little space. Hey,
right.
She's giving birth. She's giving birth. Let's
cut her
over. Give her some space.
Nobody like cleaves when you hold an infant up on a battlefield. I think you would be kind of motivated to just cleave it in half. But
they were just. I guess they didn't write that the battle manual. It's like when you see them holding the baby. Good time. Conan was born, and then we see young Conan, a boy Conan,
which I guess his mother died there.
Oh yeah,
they
cut her out. Yeah,
because,
but it was like name your son. And,
Which I think
she named him something else, but he's like, no. And then when she died, he's like, oh, I have to call him Conan. That was a rubbish name. What was that?
Star Child.
Yeah, Star Child. Flower.
Oh, Flower. Yeah, I think that's a big deal because like every other version of Conan that I've seen or read, like his mother is alive until she died.
Every other version? You saw one other version?
Well, I saw the movie and I read the comic.
Yeah, so he knows his mother. You're saying, like, young Conan knows his mother, right?
But he doesn't know his mother here.
Right.
Not at all. Not at all. That's a new thing.
Yeah. But then it goes to young Conan. Ron Perlman plays the father.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a blacksmith, which follows because of the riddle of steel. And they talk about steel, and steel's important. And then we see some picks, which was nice. Picks.
Yeah, the garbage.
Look a lot like Iroquois.
Right, they were and made a little bit more monstrous. They didn't speak; they just kind of growled and hissed.
Now I know, because like in Conan, they did this thing right in the beginning, which I don't really like about movies. They're like, okay, how do we make this kid look badass? Well, we'll just show him running around being badass. Like that's the only thing that's going to make him interesting is that he's going to be just so badass at everything. So he's able to run this little competition with these other kids, and he's got like an egg in his mouth. Mm-hmm. And he's going out there and run. And he's, what are they looking for, like a bread or something? I forget. He throws something out there and they have to go find it. And they have to come back with the egg still intact. Mm-hmm. And then he comes across these ticks and he decides to kill them. He chops off three of their heads and he comes back and he throws their heads on the ground and spits out the egg. Oh, he's so badass. And everyone's like, whoa. No one's like disturbed.
Right.
Like, his kid's just like chopped off three heads.
Yeah,
and
it's a warrior culture. Like,
well, no, it's not really
like
disturbed.
That.
That's your nice heads, boy.
Did they do something wrong? I mean,
I think
son,
like,
there's like justifiable homicide. There's self-defense. Was it self-defense? Do we have stand your ground?
But no. I don't know. I just kind of saw it as like, hey, that kid's got a problem.
I don't mind it, but I see your point. When they have like this ultimate badass that can kill like 20 warriors, like how does anybody defeat this village when he's like the kid of these badasses?
Yeah,
and then they're just going to be conquering the world. I don't know if you ever read the Dune books, the prequels.
No.
They're so badass, the Atreides. Then the original Doom book, you're reading it, it's like, how did these guys get smoked
right.
by the Harkonnen?
Right.
Well, I mean, I know this
anyway,
is
back
really...
to Conan.
Yeah.
So he beats these Picts, but then Stephen Lang's character comes. It's very much like James Earl Jones
right.
in the original.
Yeah,
so he meets the what is going to be the villain of the story. And he kills the father in a very cruel way.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like Conan.
Conan kind of kill him. It's like Conan's got to
right,
hold this
right.
chain that holds his molten steel. Maybe he could have waited till it cooled.
That was an option.
You're going to be able to hold this for like 5 seconds only. Oh, you're gonna kill your father. And the father is like, who's a blacksmith, is like, oh, just let me go. But couldn't he go, okay, it'll probably cool in about an hour.
Right.
For 30 minutes. Can you hold on for 30 minutes? Yeah, you're strong. But no, he's like, just kill him.
Well, he just proved that he was a badass and killed three pigs.
Yeah. So
I don't
know why.
It's like
why
really
like...
hard to do is like chop you.
Oh, I think they lit the thing
he
on
did
fire.
It.
The,
yeah.
No, they lit the
oh,
fire.
The
bit, yeah,
yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
No, I remember that now.
Yeah.
All right. All right. So that, maybe that wasn't a huge
okay.
flaw.
Yeah.
So he does that. He kills his dad. I mean, this part of the story is bad. And then it jumps to when he's an adult, and then you realize that you've already seen the best part of the movie.
Yeah,
which
right,
is very
right.
sad.
It really is. Because
you're making fun of this part of the movie, and at least you're kind of feeling something.
Yeah.
And then Jason Momoa appears and sucks the life out of a movie. I've never
yes.
seen somebody with... You watch him as Khal Drogo, and I guess he's got some charisma, and you think, wow, this guy can kind of carry a movie.
No. When I first saw the production stills of him as Conan, I'm like, okay, I can go for this, and it might have been... Because
he looks like Conan.
Yeah,
without the fringe anyway.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
He had kind of like a savagery to him, and when you see him on Game of Thrones, he's big. He's imposing, an imposing figure in that setting, but they cast people around him that were larger than him, so Conan's a little bit... I'm just going to average size and he can't deliver any lines. I mean, he should have just been silent, and I think that's what the
Khal Drogo is like. They should have made him speak like another language. It doesn't bode well for Aquaman,
right? Right.
Like Aquaman's not even an interesting character to begin with, and now he's gonna have to like deliver some lines.
Yeah,
you know.
But then again, the lines that he was given were just expository. You know, I always like think of movies like this. It kind of reminds me of one of those King's Quest types game where you're walking and you go up to the bad guy, and they have their pre-programmed line of dialogue, and you gotta get the exact line of dialogue back, and it just really seems very stiff like that. You know, it's just there really is no in-character interaction.
Yeah, I mean, he starts off saving some slaves. He frees them, and I was like, now we'll party. Like a joyless party.
Right.
There's even like topless women, but it's
right,
so joyless.
They're like throwing topless women over their shoulder, just like, okay, let's go drink.
It was like they didn't know what tone they wanted to strike, so they went with toneless.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't like fun swashbuckly. It wasn't dark. I mean, the imagery was dark, but you couldn't see anything from like this movie. So you just went with this like toneless movie with a charismaless lead. And Stephen Lang, he was in
Avatar.
Right.
And he's actually in some proper movies. I think he was in a Civil War movie.
He's like,
where he plays Stonewall Jackson. But here it was...
This is annoying. It was more annoying than Avatar.
Well, it was... Like, he wasn't... what do they say? Like, chewing the scenery? Like, he wasn't even doing that.
Right.
He was... It was like everybody gave up and was like, I'm just going to deliver my lines.
We're just
and,
getting this paycheck.
Yeah, just go back to my trailer. And Rose McGowan was playing a creepy character that wasn't creepy enough.
Mm-hmm.
It was his daughter, but
and
they
had
a weird had,
like,
relationship.
Goth finger things that she used to point at everybody.
Yeah, and it's like...
And she lost one once. I don't know how that happened. She's like, oh, she was here. It was one of her thingies.
And then he rescues a thief.
Oh, right.
So he's got a life debt. And then that comes up later in the movie where they go, let's go rescue the thief so he can unlock something. So they go to the thing and it's like, City of Thieves. And you're like, how can you have a city of thieves? And they have a marketplace. Why is there a marketplace in a city of thieves? Why would you have
totally
that?
Empty stalls.
Yeah, it would just be
a guy steals something and the other guy steals something to put it back.
Yes. Hey, I'll trade you this. And it's like, well, why trade? I'm just going to steal it from you. And isn't that mine anyway? So they have a city of thieves. He picks up this thief who comes for like a bit and then it's like, see you later. Mm-hmm. They could have replaced that thief with a key.
Right.
Yeah, I can't even remember what he's supposed to get.
I don't.
Because it was like they get there. So there's a long production of going, okay, we have this thief that we established early in the movie. So we go to the city of thieves to get him. And then we go to this place that we need to unlock, and we have a monster set piece, mm-hmm. and then it's like, oh, they're not there after all. They're somewhere else.
Right, they've already left,
and it was like, wow. it was pointless.
But just like the magic item, the mask that they set up that was broken apart, and that was why they raided the village to find the last mm-hmm. piece of the mask. And then they assemble the mask, and it turns into a helmet, and okay, he's not immortal. He doesn't become like Superman. It's just like, okay, now he's got a new accessory.
And of course, everyone's like, mask!
Really? Yeah, that should be like, okay, now he's unbeatable, but it was like, mm-hmm, he's got a different look now.
Yeah. A little seance at the end where he's going to bring his wife back.
Right,
is the whole chosen one.
Yeah, that's what.
So he meets the chosen one.
And she is going to be a vessel for Stephen Lang, the villain's dead wife's spirit. And there, I think there was some attempt to give sympathetic motivation to the villain in that where you're like, ooh, I'm torn because he kind of loves his wife. And it just becomes this device because now I need to get this mask assembled and then get this chosen one lady who maybe had less charisma than Jason Momoa.
Yeah.
You know, I wrote this down last time, but I realized that when she went off and he went after her and she asked him, he's like, what do you value in life? And he's like, oh, defeating my enemies, eating rocks and, you know, being badass. Like, I forget exactly what he said, but there's something along that lines. And she's just like, and then that's how you get a woman to have hot, stable, hay barrel sex with you. Because it's like, then you just cut to like this little shack under the bridge with the light shining through the roof and they're just intimate. Because that turns on every woman, man. That's how you get into her pants. Just be a freaking creep.
Well, she was like, I wasn't even listening.
Yeah, right.
I just saw your pecs bouncing back and up and down.
Probably like everybody else is like, what did you just say nothing.
You're right. Are you still talking? Yeah, and to put like a spunky female role against Conan is ridiculous. You need a woman warrior. You need Red Sonja.
Yeah, the woman was part of a monastery.
Right.
Where they have male and female acolytes.
And so they're kind of implying her virginity, which is totally gone.
Yep.
Yeah,
got rid of that.
But yet they're still using her to be the vessel.
Right.
Yeah.
Virginity,
I guess it's not important. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think that brings the whole character of Conan down. Like, they spent any time setting him up, and then he's just like, you know, some funky little banter with this spunky little girl, and she's like, he's just nothing after those kind of scenes. She's like, really? This is they have a little meet cute, and they're going to, you know, fall for each other, and it's just silliness. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what this movie kind of reminded me of? You ever see the Prince of Persia movie?
No.
It's almost exactly like that.
Wow.
Is it really terrible?
Yes.
Because Jake Gyllenhaal can act. Oh, but he learned to act after Prince of Persia.
A badass.
Maybe he made this version. It's like,
imagine Jake Gyllenhaal trying to play Conan.
Yeah, he looked like he was in good shape. Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know. Possibly the witty banter between the characters is less annoying? More plausible? But yeah, it was along
those
levels.
Well, there was no witty
bad.
Banter between
exactly. Yeah.
It's like he never said anything witty, and neither did she. It was just like two characters, and, I don't know, maybe like real life. You actually had a camera like following this guy around. You're like, wow, this guy's bored.
he turned her on for some reason.
Well, she's like lived with a bunch of monks, and then he doesn't wear a shirt.
Beefcake.
Yeah, he'll do. whatever.
Better than all these other dudes that are hanging on this boat.
What are my
that
choices?
That old guy, the pirate.
He didn't really understand the relationship between, the pirate.
Ha ha, we are friends! Okay, I buy it.
It seemed like they were friends, but then it was like, see you later! Mm-hmm. This is where we part. Why? Yeah,
hey,
it's like, this is my life quest. And then, like, I'm getting close to my life quest of killing the guy who killed my dad. He's like, and this is where I should leave you, best friend.
No, he said, go get her so you can have... getting her pants. He was hooking a brother up.
Oh, but he couldn't be around for that?
No. Well, he didn't want to watch. He's like, hey, man, it's your time.
I've got the camera.
Yeah. That was the last we saw of him.
No, but it's like you go to a bar with your buddy, and he's like, oh, you're going to, yeah, go meet her. I'll never see you again. See you.
Well, give me a hug. This is a time of high adventure.
Oh, and that's funny, because in the beginning, we got
Morgan Freeman, right?
Yeah, and this one is Morgan Freeman.
Mm, all right.
And the kind of the beginning voiceover just kind of does the Robert E. Howard stuff in Conan the Barbarian. It's very short.
Mm-hmm.
And then here, Morgan Freeman just talks and talks and talks.
Yeah.
Giving us the backstory of the villain. Or of this mask.
Of the mask,
yeah.
Right, yeah.
I mean, it could have just been a ritual. It could just been, well, we just needed to find her.
I felt like it was Morgan Freeman just sitting in his home where he has his own like recording studio where he's just like... Okay, what are we doing today?
Conan
the Barbarian. All right, there was a mask, and this mask had great power. All right, next. What are we doing next?
Insurance.
All right. Well, here, today on insurance, it felt as if, like, his delivery was the same.
I wish I had a voice like that.
I wish we had Mako. Mako was still with us, man.
And that's strange, too, when they have a voiceover. Like, often when Morgan Freeman does voiceover at the beginning, he's in the movie. Like, he's a character.
Yeah.
And he's just the voiceover guy.
He probably read the rest of the script. He's like, nope. Yeah. And I think they had this monster set piece. And it was so dark, you couldn't see anything. So you're just like, you just give up watching it. Just like, end it.
Oh, that tentacle thing.
Yeah.
That was the time that I almost laughed a second time. Because that one guy like fell down and like ate him. And then he flung up and it was like half of his body. And Yeah, I don't know. There was a lot of violence in it. Like where like, you know, they had like that scene where they're pulling out that guy's eye or something like that.
Is that the nose?
Where they cut off his nose and they had the other guys, they put the key in the guy and they want to tear him apart.
Right. Yeah.
But like, I could have done with a lot more splatter, a lot more visceral.
This is R, yeah.
It is R.
For
sex scene.
Yeah.
Some nudity.
Yeah, that's right. But I mean, that's...
Bloody violence. And some sexuality and nudity.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say it's pretty violent, but it's not, like, colorful. Even, like, the color of the blood is, like, the same black that's on the cover,
you
know? Like,
see that. Yeah, especially it's when
like,
you tilt it away from
it's like,
camera.
It's like oil. It could have been more R.
Yeah, I really was thinking this was PG-13. Like, I mean, there definitely was nudity and violence and, you know, references to things that could make it or not, but just... Barely. I mean, if you think about what an 80s PG was, this is an 80s PG movie.
Right, yeah.
And it's strange now because, you know, just like with Spider-Man, like you've had a couple of shots at getting a Spider-Man series going. Is there going to be a successful Conan after this? Are they going to be able to resurrect this franchise?
Well,
the thing about Spider-Man is that the first one was successful.
Yeah, that's true. But they needed to... Right.
And even if the Amazing... It was like the first one was successful, the second one was successful, the third one was not. So then they go, okay, reboot.
Mm-hmm.
And then, they made the Andrew Garfield's Amazing Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. It was all right. And then I didn't see the second one, but I guess it was pretty bad.
Reboot.
Yeah. So they're like, no, reboot.
This is actually changing companies. It's no longer Sony. Marvel's making another one. So it's like, it's going to be a bit different.
Yeah, but I think maybe if this had been slightly successful, it's been six years.
They talked about him personally writing a sequel.
Well, that would be worse. Unless his wooden acting was at a protest to the script. He's like, well, I'm going to give this nothing.
Yeah,
they decided to go against it because I heard rumor that they're going to come back with Arnold Schwarzenegger as Conan again and do like old man,
like a
King Conan.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because this is technically kind of like a reboot because it's The Barbarian.
Right.
But this kind of, they're going to go back to the old canon again and try to continue with that Conan story.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So we were talking about a drinking game you could play to make it somewhat interesting. Because like Alan said, it's not so bad that it's good. It's just bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know
boring,
when people
yeah.
say that, you go, I don't believe you. I think I could watch this movie and find it funny because it's so bad. And you're like, no, trust us.
Yeah.
I think if you did a drinking game, it would be like, I don't even know what you could do. You have to be things like...
Whenever you see chains.
Every time chains.
Someone's chain.
Every time you think, well, I could have done better.
Yeah. Or they find a key somewhere. There's a key.
Whenever you're disappointed, take a drink.
Right.
Yeah, or something like that. But it would be that joyless drinking. It would be like drinking with an alcoholic next to you. Where you're like drinking and you're going, I shouldn't be doing this.
Yes.
I shouldn't be doing this. In this previous job, we'd have work parties and we go, one guy's clearly an alcoholic, like his like skin's like all blotchy and red and like peeling away, and that was one sign. Also the vodka he would down at his lunches. So that was another sign. Another sign would be As soon as work ends, he went and bought two cans of beer and slammed them both down as he walked to a bar.
Wow.
Yeah. So could have been an alcoholic. But when you go out, everybody's drinking and he's sitting next to you. It was just like the worst experience. So you're just like, another beer?
I think you just stopped me. I'm going to go home and rethink my life. I think I would watch Cole again before I watch this.
Kevin Sorbo.
Yeah, Tia Carrera.
Yep, she's attractive.
And Barbarians and Heavy Metal.
Yeah, it's a real miss, and it's a real shame because...
There was some money there.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
there was. They probably got it back.
I don't mean like, I really hope they made their money back. I meant like, they clearly had some budget.
Right. Yeah, it wasn't the Mutant Chronicles level of...
and at least they were like, we have no budget, let's try to do something and do the best we can. And you're kind of like, all right, I get it. I know I did that, and I can respect this. And here you're like, well, you have a ship. You had a budget for a ship, but why don't you do something interesting on the ship?
You know, actually, as bad as this was, I did read that it was nominated for an award.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was nominated for the Golden Trailer Award for having the best cardboard standee. Or, it was nominated. So I thought, the first thing I thought, like, which actor was it? Because they were all kind of cardboardy.
Actually, they probably used it.
Yeah, it's like, was it in the shop somewhere? But no, it was that thing that they have at the movie theaters where it's like Conan standing on top of all the skulls. Didn't win. Sorry. That it had a chance of succeeding somewhere.
Well, Thelma Adams from US Weekly thought it was packed with thrills.
Packed with thrills.
And I hope that ended Thelma Adams' career because she lies.
Anyway, yes.
Yeah, but pretty brutal. So is a big not recommend, basically.
Oh, man. Yeah. No, we're saying, I'd say, like, go for the RPG if you really like Conan. Don't go for this movie.
Or just go for the short stories. Go to the original source. Well, thank you for joining us. Hopefully we saved you some money and some time. And join us again. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.